Prerequisites and assumptions. Note, this article reflects how the Kotlin X coroutine scheduler works as of February 2026. Internal implementation details can change between releases. You have written Kotlin coroutines before. You know what launch, async, with context, and suspend do at a basic level. You've used dispatchers default, dispatchers IO, and dispatchers main in at least one project. This article is about the machinery underneath those abstractions. Further reading. Kotlin X coroutine source code, everything described here comes from reading this. coroutinescheduler.kt, the scheduler implementation. Official coroutine context and dispatchers documentation. Dispatcher.kt, where default scheduler and default IO scheduler live. One scheduler, not two. Most people get this wrong. Dispatchers default and dispatchers IO are not backed by separate thread pools. They share a single coroutine scheduler instance. The same worker threads execute tasks from both dispatchers. Open dispatcher.kt in the Kotlin X coroutine source and you'll find this. Please check the code snippet for more details. And dispatchers IO is defined as, please check the code snippet for more details. Unlimited IO scheduler dispatches every task into the same default scheduler, but marks it with a blocking context flag, literally a blocking context boolean. That flag is the entire distinction between an IO task and a CPU task inside the scheduler. This design exists because creating and destroying threads is expensive. Sharing one pool removes the overhead of maintaining separate pools and cuts down on thread context switches when a coroutine moves from with context, dispatchers default to with context, dispatchers IO. The scheduler tries to keep execution on the same physical thread when possible, blocking versus non-blocking tasks. The scheduler classifies every task with a single boolean. Is it blocking or not? Please check the code snippet for more details. That's literally it. A boolean. When you dispatch work on dispatcher's default, tasks get non-blocking context. When you dispatch on dispatcher's IO, tasks get blocking context. Why does this matter? The scheduler treats these two categories very differently. Non-blocking CPU tasks are expected to actively use the processor, compute, transform, serialize, and yield quickly. They should not call thread sleep, perform file i/o, make network calls, or wait on locks. The scheduler gives them a limited number of threads and expects them to cooperate. Blocking IO tasks use the CPU too, but they spend most of their time waiting on external resources, a database response, a file read, a network socket. The thread is alive but sitting idle while the disk or network does its thing. If these tasks ran on the limited CPU pool, they'd hold threads hostage doing nothing, starving actual compute work. The scheduler compensates by letting blocking tasks release their CPU permit and spinning up additional threads so CPU work doesn't stall. Please check the code snippet for more details. CPU permits, how the scheduler protects your cores. The scheduler uses a concept called CPU permits to limit how many threads can run CPU-bound work simultaneously. The number of permits equals core pool size, which defaults to the number of available processors, with a minimum of two, the key invariant from the source code. Scheduler always has at least min, pending CPU tasks, core pool size, and at most core pool size threads to execute CPU tasks. When a worker picks up a blocking task, it releases its CPU permit back to the pool. This tells the scheduler, I'm going to be stuck waiting. Let someone else do CPU work. The scheduler can then wake up or create another worker to grab that freed permit. Please check the code snippet for more details. This is why you should never perform blocking operations on dispatcher's default. If you call thread sleep 5000 on a default dispatched coroutine, you're holding a CPU permit hostage while the thread sits idle. The scheduler has no idea you're waiting on something external. It thinks your thread is actively computing and won't compensate by creating new workers. On a 4-core machine, you've just starved 25% of your CPU capacity for 5 seconds. Parallelism limits, default versus IO. This is where the numbers get interesting. Property dispatchers default dispatchers IO. Thread pool shared coroutine scheduler. Task context, non-blocking context, blocking context. Parallelism cap number of CPU cores, min 2, max, 64, number of CPU cores. Can exceed cap no yes via limited parallelism. Thread behavior bounded by CPU permits, no new threads on blocking releases CPU permit, triggers thread compensation. System property Kotlin X coroutines, scheduler core pool size Kotlin X coroutines, I/O parallelism. On a typical 8-core machine, dispatcher's default allows 8 concurrent CPU tasks. Dispatcher's I/O defaults to 64 concurrent blocking tasks, but the underlying scheduler can have far more threads alive simultaneously because each blocking task triggers thread compensation. The I/O dispatcher also has a unique elasticity property. When you call dispatchers, I/O limited parallelism, 100, you get a limited parallelism view that is not capped by the I/O dispatcher's 64-thread limit. These views are additive. Please check the code snippet for more details. During peak load, the system can have up to 64 plus 100 plus 60 equals 224 concurrent blocking tasks across these views, subject to the scheduler's max pool size and actual demand. During idle periods, all these views share the same small set of threads. Compare this to dispatcher's default limited parallelism N. If N greater or equal core pool size, it just returns dispatcher's default itself. There's no elasticity. The CPU pool is a hard ceiling. Workers and their queues. So far we've talked about dispatchers, permits, and parallelism limits, the rules of the system. Now let's look at who actually does the work. Every thread in the coroutine scheduler is a worker. Worker is an inner class that extends thread. A worker is not something that runs on a thread. It is the thread with extra state bolted on, a local task queue, a CPU permit flag, a parking state. When you see worker and thread in this article, they mean the same thing inside the scheduler. The distinction only matters if you're reading the source. Worker is the type, thread is the superclass. Each worker owns a local work queue, and the scheduler maintains two global queues shared across all workers. Here's how everything fits together. Please check the code snippet for more details. Dispatcher's default and I/O feed into the same scheduler. The scheduler distributes tasks to workers. Each worker has its own local queue. Dispatcher's main is entirely separate. It's a single thread with an event loop, not part of the coroutine scheduler at all. Local work queue. A worker's local queue is built on a ring buffer. Think of it as a fixed-size array, 128 slots, where the end connects back to the beginning, forming a circle. Two counters track state, a write counter, where new tasks go in, and a read counter, where tasks come out. Both counters only go up and never reset. To find the actual array slot, the scheduler masks the counter with index and 127, which maps any counter value back into the 0-127 range. This is the ring part. Counters climb forever, but array access wraps around automatically. The buffer never grows or shrinks. It reuses the same slots over and over without allocating new memory. Please check the code snippet for more details. Tasks are read from the left oldest first and written at the right. When task is picked up, the read counter advances. When a new task is added, it goes at the right position and the write counter advances. Both counters keep climbing, and the modulo mapping keeps them cycling through the same 128 slots. Only the owning worker writes to this buffer, but any worker in the pool can read from it, and that's stealing. Since there's one writer and many readers, the readers use compare and swap operations to safely claim tasks without locks. The last scheduled task slot. On top of the ring buffer sits one special slot called last scheduled task. Let's trace what happens when a coroutine dispatches new work. You call launch, dispatcher's default, do something, from inside a worker thread. The new task goes into the worker's last scheduled task slot, the fast lane. If the slot was already holding a previous task, that previous task gets pushed into the ring buffer, at the right end. When the worker finishes its current work and looks for the next task, it checks last scheduled task first. The newest task runs next. Why check last scheduled task before the ring buffer? The assumption baked into the scheduler is that the most recently dispatched coroutine is likely communicating with the currently running one. If coroutine A sends data to coroutine B through a channel, B's task lands in last scheduled task. By checking this slot first, the worker picks up B immediately. Same thread, same CPU cache, no scheduling delay. The ring buffer holds older tasks that are less likely to be part of an active back and forth. This is the semi-LIFO policy, newest first for latency, oldest preserved in FIFO order so nothing starves. The actual poll implementation is one line. Please check the code snippet for more details. Grab last scheduled task atomically, clearing it in the process. If it was empty, fall back to the ring buffer. The last scheduled task slot is also the one protected by the 100 microseconds time gate during work stealing. Other workers can't steal a task from this slot until it's been sitting there for at least 100 microseconds. Tasks that have already been pushed into the ring buffer can be stolen immediately. Global queues. There are two global queues shared across all workers, one for CPU tasks and one for blocking tasks. When you dispatch a coroutine from outside the scheduler, a callback, the main thread, or any non-worker thread, the task lands in the appropriate global queue. When a worker dispatches a new coroutine from within its own execution, the task goes into that worker's local queue instead, keeping it close for cache locality. This setup, local queues per worker plus shared global queues, is what enables the work-stealing algorithm. The work-stealing algorithm. When a worker finishes its tasks and its local queue is empty, it doesn't just park immediately. It tries to steal work from other workers. Please check the code snippet for more details. The stealing loop is random. Each worker picks a random starting index and scans through all other workers' queues. Please check the code snippet for more details. To pick which worker to steal from, the scheduler needs a random number. It uses a lightweight algorithm called ZorShift. Just a few bitwise operations, no heavy math. The standard thread local random wasn't an option because it's unavailable on Android, and wrapping random in a thread local turned out to be up to 15% slower in KTOR benchmarks. So the coroutines team rolled their own. Time-based affinity. We mentioned the 100 microseconds time gate earlier. The last scheduled task slot is protected from stealers. Here's the actual constant. Please check the code snippet for more details. Every task gets a submission time timestamp when created. If a task was submitted less than 100 microseconds ago, other workers won't steal it from the head slot. Older tasks in the ring buffer are fair game immediately. This is a deliberate trade-off. It keeps communicating coroutines on the same thread. If coroutine A sends a message to coroutine B via a channel, you want B to run on the same worker as A. Stealing it to a different core would mean a cache miss and cross-core memory traffic. The scheduler comment says this approach shows outstanding results when coroutines are cooperative, but acknowledges a downside. The scheduler now depends on a high-resolution global clock, which may limit scalability on NUMA machines. Scheduling policy, not FIFO, not LIFO, but both. We covered above how the last scheduled task slot creates semi-LIFO ordering. Newest task runs next, previous task gets pushed to the ring buffer. This policy is inspired by the Go runtime scheduler, credited to Dmitry Vyukov in the source comments. It couples communicating coroutines together, reducing scheduling latency. But bumping the old task into the ring buffer preserves some FIFO ordering, preventing the queue from degenerating into a pure stack. Tasks dispatched from external threads outside the scheduler go into the global queue, which is strictly FIFO. Anti-starvation, balancing local and global queues. Every worker has a local queue, and the scheduler has two global queues, CPU and blocking. If workers only check their local queues, externally submitted tasks could starve. The scheduler solves this probabilistically. Please check the code snippet for more details. On an 8-core machine, there's a 1 in 16 chance a worker checks global queues before its own local queue. Statistically, external tasks always make progress while the common case, local queue first, stays fast. The parked workers stack. When a worker has nothing to do, it doesn't just sleep. It pushes itself onto a lock-free Traber stack of idle workers. The stack is intrusive. Each worker object acts as a stack node via its next parked worker field. Why a stack instead of a queue? The source code explains. The stack is better than a queue, even with the contention on top, because it unparks threads in most recently used order, improving both performance and locality. Moreover, it decreases threads thrashing. If the pool has n threads when only n/2 is required, the latter half will never be unparked and will terminate itself after idle worker keep alive nanoseconds. Thread thrashing here means threads being repeatedly woken up and put back to sleep with no useful work done. The OS burns CPU cycles on scheduling overhead instead of actual computation. A stack avoids this because only the most recently parked worker gets woken first. If demand is low, the older workers at the bottom of the stack stay asleep indefinitely. Workers above core pool size that haven't been needed for 60 seconds, configurable via Kotlin X coroutine scheduler, keep alive seconds, terminate themselves. Core workers stick around. This keeps the pool lean during quiet periods without losing the baseline capacity. Main versus main immediate. This is an Android-centric distinction, but it matters anywhere dispatcher's main is available, Java FX, Swing? That was surprising to me. I always assumed main was an Android-only concept, but any platform with a UI event loop can provide one. It's easy to think that dispatchers main and dispatchers default function the same way, since both are non-blocking in nature, and you should never do blocking work on either. But they serve very different purposes. Default is a pool of threads designed to parallelize CPU-bound computation across cores. Main is a single thread, the one thread that owns the UI. Android's view hierarchy is not thread safe, so only the main thread is allowed to touch it. Default exists to crunch numbers in parallel. Main exists because someone has to own the screen. Dispatcher's main always dispatches through the platform's event loop. On Android, that's handler post. Even if you're already on the main thread, launch, dispatcher's main posts to the message queue and your code runs on the next loop iteration. Dispatcher's main immediate skips the dispatch if you're already on the correct thread. Your code runs synchronously, right now, without going through the event queue. Dispatcher's main always posts to the message queue. Please check the code snippet for more details. Your coroutine waits behind everything already in the queue. Expect at least some delay before execution. Dispatcher's main immediate skips the queue when already on main thread. Please check the code snippet for more details. Here's where it gets subtle. Consider this code. Please check the code snippet for more details. Output 132. The launch posts to the queue, so 2 runs after 3. Please check the code snippet for more details. Output 123. Since we're already on the main thread, immediate runs the coroutine body inline before continuing. When does this matter in practice? Say you're on the main thread and a network response comes back. With dispatcher's main, the UI update gets queued behind whatever else is pending. Touch events, animations, other posted runnables. That delay varies depending on what's in the queue. With main immediate, the update happens right now, in the current call. View models in Android commonly use view model scope, from Android X lifecycle, which defaults to dispatcher's main immediate for exactly this reason. When a state flow emits a new value, and a collector running on main immediate picks it up, the UI update happens in the same frame rather than being deferred to the next one. The immediate dispatcher also forms an event loop when you have nested with context, dispatcher's main immediate calls, preventing stack overflows. It shares this event loop with dispatcher's unconfined. Small things worth knowing. The core pool minimum is 2. Even on a single core machine, dispatcher's default allocates at least 2 threads. The comment in the source says this exists to give us chances that multi-threading problems get reproduced even on a single core machine. Debugging concurrency bugs on a single-threaded pool would be near impossible. The system property can force it as low as 1, but the default floor is 2. The maximum pool size is roughly 2 million threads. The scheduler uses 21 bits for thread count in its control state, giving a theoretical max of 121, 2 equals 2, 097, 150. You'll run out of memory long before hitting that. Dispatcher's I/O shares threads with dispatcher's default. The documentation says, with context, dispatcher's I/O, when already running on the default dispatcher, typically does not lead to an actual switching to another thread. The scheduler tries to keep execution on the same thread on a best effort basis. Workers use daemon threads. All scheduler worker threads have is daemon equals true. They won't prevent JVM shutdown. The Traber stack uses versioned compare and swap. The parked worker's stack encodes both a version counter and the top of stack index in a single long. Version bits protect against ABIA problems during concurrent push/pop operations. Yield uses fair dispatching. When you call yield, the coroutine goes to the tail of the queue, FIFO, instead of the head, LIFO. This prevents while true yield from starving other coroutines. The dispatch yield method exists specifically for this. Limited parallelism on I/O creates independent views. Each view from dispatcher's I/O limited parallelism, N, bypasses the I/O parallelism cap entirely. They're views of an unlimited backing dispatcher, not of dispatcher's I/O itself. The I/O cap of 64 is just the default view. Closing note. The coroutine scheduler is a well-thought-out piece of engineering. A single thread pool handles both CPU and I/O work through a permit system, and works dealing with time-based affinity keeps communicating coroutines on the same core. The whole thing runs on lock-free data structures and atomic operations in the hot path. Thread creation and termination do use synchronized, but that's off the per-task execution path. Knowing this changes how you write coroutine code. You stop treating dispatchers as magic labels and start thinking about what the scheduler actually does with your tasks. You understand why thread sleep on dispatcher's default is destructive. You see why main immediate exists and when it matters. Read the source. CoroutineScheduler.kt is around 1,000 lines and well commented. I'd argue it's some of the most readable concurrent code in the Kotlin ecosystem. You don't need to understand every compare and swap loop, but spending an hour with it will change how you think about thread pools. Glossary. Coroutine Scheduler. The internal thread pool implementation in Kotlin X coroutines that backs both dispatcher's default and dispatcher's I/O. Manages worker threads, CPU permits, work stealing, and thread lifecycle. Located in Kotlink's coroutines core /JVM/SRC/scheduling/coroutineScheduler.kt. Core pool size. The number of threads reserved for CPU-bound work defaults to the number of available processors with a minimum of 2, configurable via the Kotlin X coroutines scheduler core pool size system property. CPU permit. A token managed by the scheduler that grants a worker thread the right to execute CPU-bound, non-blocking tasks. The total number of permits equals core pool size. Workers must acquire a permit to run CPU tasks and release it when switching to blocking work. Work stealing. A load balancing technique where idle worker threads take tasks from busy workers' local queues. The coroutine scheduler adds time-based affinity. The most recently submitted task, head slot, must be at least 100 microseconds old before it can be stolen, keeping communicating coroutines on the same core. Older tasks in the ring buffer can be stolen immediately. Traber stack. A lock-free concurrent stack data structure used by the scheduler to manage parked idle worker threads. Uses compare and swap operations for thread-safe push and pop without locks. Blocking context. A Boolean flag true, attached to tasks dispatched via dispatcher's I/O, signals the scheduler that this task will block its thread, triggering thread compensation so CPU work continues uninterrupted. Limited parallelism. A mechanism to create views of a dispatcher with a constrained concurrency level. On dispatcher's I/O, these views are elastic and not subject to the default 64 thread cap. On dispatcher's default, requesting parallelism equal to or greater than the core pool size returns the dispatcher itself. Dispatcher's main immediate. A variant of dispatcher's main that skips redispatching when already executing on the main thread. Coroutine body runs synchronously instead of being posted to the platform event queue. Used by view model scope and recommended for UI updates triggered from the main thread. Thread thrashing. A situation where threads are repeatedly woken up and put back to sleep without doing useful work. The OS spends CPU time on scheduling overhead, context switches, cache invalidation, memory barriers, instead of running your code. Compare and swap, compare and swap. An atomic CPU instruction that updates a memory location only if it currently holds an expected value. The foundation of lock-free programming. If another thread changed the value first, the compare and swap fails and the caller retries. Avoids the overhead and deadlock risks of traditional locks. A BIA problem. A subtle bug in lock-free algorithms using compare and swap. Thread 1 reads value A, gets preempted. Thread 2 changes a right arrow B, right arrow A. Thread 1 resumes, sees A, and the compare and swap succeeds, but the state has changed underneath. Solved by adding a version counter to detect that the value is modified even if it looks the same. NUMA, non-uniform memory access. A hardware architecture where memory access time depends on which CPU socket the memory is attached to. A core reading memory from its local bank is fast. Reading from a remote socket's bank is slower. Relevant because a global clock, used for work stealing timestamps, can become a bottleneck when many cores across sockets contend on it. Cache locality. The performance benefit of keeping related work on the same CPU core, so data stays in that core's L1, L2 cache. When a task gets stolen to a different core, the new core must fetch the task's data from main memory or a remote cache, a cache miss, which is significantly slower than a cache hit.